You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, and welcome to another episode of Stat Me Up for Anfield Index, ladies and gentlemen. The international break is set to come to an end. Hopefully you've enjoyed yours. Hopefully you're looking forward to a bit of an Easter weekend. Hopefully most of you have got 4 days off. And maybe the biggest thing, hopefully the Reds are about to take 3 points against Brighton at Anfield on Sunday. And to chat through that game, to chat through a few stats, to talk through the international break and many things off the field, I've got the normal man with me, Ben Boxack. Ben, how are we?
Yeah, all good. How about yourself?
Yeah, good, mate. Looking forward to the sort of Easter weekend. It's been a nice little break in a way, hasn't it, the internationals? And it should be a nice Easter break. But that all depends on what the Reds serve up on Sunday, ultimately, and what news we get around certain things. But first thing, I'll rewind you a little bit to what's just happened, because I know I've seen you tweet quite a bit. And I've had my reply to each to you, I'm sure you've noticed as well, around the international break and the highlights there. So I know you've been tweeting quite a bit around the international break and who's been doing what, red-wise, for their country. What would you say, stats-wise, what have been the biggest things from the international break for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of Liverpool fans, you know, we get nervous around this time. And a part of me is feels that way as well. But a part of me also just loves sort of international football, which might be weird, but I do enjoy it. I think it's the only aspect of football where we don't really have the money, like City's owners, clubs like City or PSG, we don't really have that aspect, and we see a lot of surprise results. I think sometimes as well, playing for your country, for players, means more than it does for their club. So there's a lot more passion involved and stuff like that. So I do enjoy it. Maybe not as much as watching Liverpool, but I don't mind it. Essentially, I like to watch international football. And I think this international football in particular was quite entertaining from a Liverpool perspective. I went to Wales under 21s and watched Lewis Kumas make his debut.
Nice.
At Rodney Parade. It's only about 10 minutes from where I live. So I thought, you know, there's an opportunity to watch a Liverpool player make their debut for their country at that level. why not? And it worked out pretty well for Kumas. He scored the winning goal against Lithuania after a few minutes of coming on as well, right in front of me as well. It was a nice finish as well. And I thought he did really well. Nice moment for him. Another debut goal to sort of put into his list this season.
Yeah.
Of scoring at Anfield in the FA Cup for the first team. He also scored in his first start in the under-21 Premier League as well earlier in the season. So he's someone I kind of just wanted to highlight personally because I saw him and
I thought
he played really well. I mean, in terms of the others, like Harvey Elliott was just incredibly good. Two goals, two assists in two games. Like, I think he's a top goal scorer in under-21 Euro qualifying.
Mm.
I don't know what more he has to do to get into that England squad. But, you know, I know a lot of people have sort of compared that situation with Kobe Mainoo being called up, but I think, you know, the reason Mainoo's being picked up is because England are so poor in that holding midfield role. Like, there's a reason why Jordan Henderson keeps being called up as well, because, like, you know, there's not that many players of that caliber for England.
Whereas
I think if you look at Elliott's sort of positional rivals, okay, you can make an argument. Actually, there's quite a few in the attacking midfield positions that, you know, probably at this moment deserve to be picked ahead of him. The likes of Cole Palmer, who actually didn't even get any minutes for England, which was a surprise. Yeah. You know, stats-wise and performance-wise, you'd say at the moment Palmer's probably just a little bit ahead of Elliott. So I think, yeah, fair enough. But at the same time, like, what more does he have to do? Like, surely he's not far away from being called into the senior squad. Another one I thought who did really well was Luis Diaz. Again, you know, because of his sort of knock that he picked up against Man United, I didn't necessarily want him to do well, but he was brilliant when he played against Spain for Colombia, created the most chances in that game, obviously provided the assist for the winning goal, which sort of extended Colombia's long, long unbeaten run. He also completed the most dribbles in that match. And yeah, after that, he featured in Colombia's 3-2 victory over Romania as well. And that has meant that Colombia is actually unbeaten in 21 matches now, which is pretty the longest run in international football. So, yeah, that's pretty impressive. And I think he got to wear the captain's armband as well at some points, which sort of makes him the sixth Liverpool player, first team, who's wearing their national team armband at senior level. Obviously, Jadon Dans wore it at under 18 level as well. Him, Trey Anioni, and Amaro Nalo got another trophy in the bag after the Carabao Cup, winning the Pinatar Cup or something like that.
The big ones, yeah.
Every trophy counts. So I thought they did well. Kyle Kelly is probably another one to mention from the academy. Mm-hmm. Kind of an unexpected international debut for St. Kitts and Nevis. But, you know, I respect anyone who's eligible to play for England and chooses another nationality to represent. So fair play to him. He's got an interesting profile as well. Under 18 level, has sort of competed in the most defensive duels per 90 out of anyone in the under 18 team. So he's very active defensively, plays as a holding midfielder mostly, but he's covered at left back and he's covered at centre backs at times this season. And I think he's an interesting one to sort of watch. Maybe someone who could potentially be involved in pre-season in the summer. Connor Bradley got a fantastic goal. That was really special. He plays kind of in a more advanced position for his country as almost a right winger. Reminds me of Gareth Bale for Wales at times. I think he made the comparison to sort of how he wants to be like Robertson for Scotland. But for me, I know he actually named Bale as his sort of idol growing up, so I can see the resemblance there as well. Not another one to highlight, I thought Luke Chambers for England under 20.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people sort of mentioned him, but he creates he was involved in two England under 20 goals in two matches, got the pre-assist in two goals against Poland and the Czech Republic. In the second game, he only came on as a substitute and played like 12 minutes, but you know, he still created sort of one goal, which is impressive. And then in the second game, he actually started against the Czech Republic and made 16 recoveries, was involved in 12 defensive duels, won 7 of them, I think 6 interceptions as well, which is, again, really impressive numbers. And he's doing really well on loan at Wigan, won their player of the month for February.
Nice.
So yeah, he's doing really well. He's definitely one to watch. Had another solid international break as well. I think probably finally, let's give Dominic Soboslai a mention. You know, he was sort of the talisman for his country again. I know you said they're sort of meaningless friends, but in some ways, I guess there is some importance in preparation for the Euros. And I think for Dominic in particular, he really wants to continue that unbeaten run as captain of the national team, which has now stretched to 14 games. So since he's been appointed captain, he hasn't lost a game. And in his last 5 games now for Hungary, he has 5 goals and 3 assists. So not bad numbers. And I think, you know, if you watch the games, like he's plays a lot deeper than he does for Liverpool, and everything seems to sort of flow through him. He covers pretty much every position when he's playing for Hungary, and it means a lot to him too, I think, to sort of, you know, be the captain at such a young age and be sort of such an iconic figure. Because I think a lot of people in Budapest, they go to watch the game, and the reason why the game is a sellout within like an hour every single time the Hungarian matches are released is probably because of him. It's a big factor for sure. I mean, the national team is doing well, but I think Soboslai is contributing a lot to the public's interest.
Yeah, it's a strange one. And listen, for everyone listening, I fully respect everyone in international football. I full respect for the people who get behind it, like it, proud of their nations, proud of their countries. I fully understand and respect that. For me, international football has just always been a bit of a no-no in that type of regard. And yeah, you're right. I mean, I tweeted back to you jokingly, as you know, about Dominic Soboslai, and half of Hungarian Twitter jumped on me. So I probably owe an apology there, don't I, in that regard to them as well. But yeah, I suppose the one thing I always think about with the international break is, like you mentioned, no injuries. That's what you pray for. And obviously we had the Robbo situation, don't we? We're still waiting for full news on that. Suggestions is positive from a lot of journalists, but we're still awaiting a clear update on that. And then, yeah, like you said, Soboslai, probably wouldn't want him to play the full 90. I get rhythm tune-up, as people said as well, that plays a part. Probably the happiest bit I had of the international break was that Salah didn't go, Nunes didn't go, and then Endo had his game cancelled early, didn't he, because of issues between Japan and Korea, apparently. So, yes, that was the thing. But we will see very shortly what impact it has on the boys, and Sunday beckons. I mean, before we jump to the game stuff, Ben, off the field as well, there's quite a few things going on, as there always is. The Richard Hughes one was probably the biggest announcement of the week just gone, wasn't it? I think it was no surprise, as we mentioned before, but it was confirmed by Liverpool, people who believe he's going to start work on the 1st of June. Get a grip, but that's obviously up to your opinion, I suppose, there. I mean, I know you've talked about Richard Hughes before and tweeted about him, that type of thing. You're a big fan of this guy, aren't you?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Are you that person who has everything? the coolest merch, and those must-have fan threads. Well, over at our Anfield Index shop, we've gone that extra mile when it comes to pimping up your Liverpool collection. From our popular range of bespoke design t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies and hats, to our signature edition mugs, prints and coasters, all provided with fast worldwide shipping. We have something for every red. We also stock official LFC merchandise and are licensed with the Premier League and UEFA to sell official iron-on shirt badges and sleeve patches. As a listener to this podcast, you can get 10% off everything with coupon code AIPRO10. Just head over to anfieldindex.shop or find us on Etsy by searching for Anfield Index.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that he is someone who knows Michael Edwards so well just makes sense for Liverpool. Obviously, given that Edwards is not going to be in the same position as he was last time,
yeah,
he needed a sporting director to work with who he, you know, he knows he can work with. He knows they're sort of in the same tune, and I think that's certainly Hughes in that sense. And you know, I know, you know, if you're looking at his transfers at Bournemouth, like it might not be the most impressive, but he's gotten a lot of the recruitment right during his time at the club. And I think from a sporting director's perspective, I think the most impressive sort of factor about Hughes is the way he's been able to convince more high caliber players to come down and play for Bournemouth. So, you know, the likes of like Nathan Aki, for example, he might have, you know, he had probably had better offers, and yet he decided, actually, I'm going to play for Bournemouth, and it worked out for him. He got regular minutes and they've managed to sell him on for a big profit. I covered the Milos Kerkes transfer.
Yeah.
You know, and I know he had a lot of other interest in him, but he was sort of won over by Hughes and the Bournemouth group because of what they were offering. And I think the big appeal at the time was the fact that Bournemouth managed to get Andy Irola in, who, you know, he was another sort of high caliber manager who probably has, you know, higher offers or better offers. He did really well in La Liga, and I know a lot of clubs were interested in him, but he decided to come to Bournemouth, and you know, through the manager as well, they were able to bring in players, who were, you know, that next level almost for Bournemouth, because at Bournemouth, that's what you're always looking to be, you know, making the next steps, bringing in the sort of next level players. And that's what Hughes has done really well. He's been able to build Bournemouth gradually. It wasn't an overnight success, but, you know, if you look at where he started and where they are now, it's been really impressive. And I think just on that, I like him. I like the fact that he's got the Italian connection as well, because I think that Serie A is actually probably one of the strongest leagues in the world right now, for me anyway. And there's a lot of exciting players in Serie A at the moment. And the fact that Hughes speaks fluent Italian, he's got that Italian connection. I mean, I would like to see us sort of dip more into that market, because when we have recently, Mohamed Salah, Alisson Becker, like we've done all right with those signings, and I think there's a few players who, you know, could be on their radar from that league, and you know, maybe Hughes can have that influence and convince the scouting team to look in that direction as well.
Will be interesting to see. And Michael Edwards obviously likes it, because not only is he bringing Richard Hughes, he's also bringing Mark Birchall by the sounds of it, their football scout. And the name escapes me, but they're head of football operations. So it's a full plundering job on Bournemouth by the looks of it. And the other stuff that's really sort of up in the talk off the pitch, and the names come round, as we know, Ben, about who the new head coach will be eventually. But it does seem, again, the Ruben Amorim talks really reverberated, started again through a lot of sources. A lot of people talking about his release clause, Liverpool being interested, that sort of whipped up again. I mean, these do seem to be the two names, don't they? AA, Amorim, Alonso. They are, there seems, the front runners, the names that keep getting mentioned. As always happens in a pivotal race. It usually comes down to two, doesn't it? Stats-wise, because I know we've talked before about like preferences, what we like, what resonates, but from a stats perspective, when we look at it that way, because that's what we do on this show, how do they stack up stats-wise?
I mean, for me, I still think Alonso is the outstanding candidate. If you're looking at the way he plays, his team has that sort of gig and pressing mentality, but at the same time, like, they're really good in possession, almost Guardiola-esque in the way they move the ball about. We've spoke about, how they've completed the most short passes in the Bundesliga, but at the same time, they also rank in first place for recoveries made in the Bundesliga, tackles made in the final third, the opposition's final third, sorry. I think they rank in second place for that. So, they rank really high for those pressing metrics as well. On the other hand, I think Amorim, I like his style. It's interesting, but I don't quite see the same intensity, the same sort of gegenpressing as with Alonso. For recoveries, they rank around mid-table in the Portuguese league. Similarly, I think they're like only sixth or seventh made in the final third. So those are not really outstanding statistics when we're looking about key metrics for what we expect a Liverpool team to play like on the Jurgen Klopp. I know there's been reports that, he ticks the data-wise, he ticks a lot of boxes. So, I'm sure there are other metrics that we measure as well, maybe that, I don't, or we don't quite have access to. So
true.
I'm sure, there are other underlying data that where he does profile well. But just looking at those sort of figures, for me, I think Alonso on those alone wins it for me. And I think his sort of style is so intriguing in terms of the way Leverkusen keep possession, which is not as prevalent in the Sporting team, in Amorim Sporting teams. I think what obviously Amorim has a much bigger sample size in terms of he's been working at that top level for a few years. Another sort of factor that I have question marks over Amorim is his performances in Europe. I think he obviously got knocked out in the round of 16 in the Europa League this season. I think the furthest he's ever gotten was the quarterfinals in the Europa League, and then the round of 16 in the Champions League. I mean, in the Champions League, when he did get to that stage, it was Man City. So you're not expecting him to win.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
It's a bit hard. But like, for me, he's always gotten Sporting to the stage where they're expected to advance, but he never got them quite out of the stage where, it's the game's maybe 50-50 or, you're expected to win you're not quite expected to win, but you get that victory. I think the closest he got was knocking out Arsenal a couple of seasons ago in the Europa League. A lot of teams have knocked out Arsenal, and Olympiacos also knocked out Arsenal recently. So again, that's not necessarily such a result, and it wasn't the Arsenal team that is playing now. So, last season when he got to the quarterfinal, he played against Juventus, which would have been one of those games where, if you knock them out, that's really impressive, but he couldn't quite do it. With Alonso, I think we haven't seen that in him in Europe either. Fair. I mean, he's reached the semi-final of the Europa League in his first season, but like the run-up to that, is I think he played Ferencvaros in like the round of 16 and Union SG in the quarterfinals. Those are two teams you'd expect to win. Again, this time around in the Europa League, the group was pretty straightforward for him. Quarabag was again like a team you'd expect to beat, and actually, in fact, they almost didn't. So, you know, with Alonso, he doesn't have that experience yet.
Yeah.
With Amorim, he hasn't been able to do it. Whereas with Alonso, we just don't know. So both of them actually leave a few sort of question marks in Europe. But, you know, with Alonso, I'm going to sort of give him the benefit of the doubt and see how he does this season in Europe. Right. Sort of increase his sample size. And obviously, I think his Leverkusen team was quite unlucky not to beat Mourinho in the semi-finals of last season's Europa League. So we'll see how far they get. But it is just, I think, something to note, because when I'm looking at prospective Liverpool managers, I'm always looking at sort of have they managed to achieve something extraordinary? Because that's what you need to do to manage Liverpool. You need to have done something remarkable. And yes, Amorim, you know, he won the league title with Sporting for the first time, I think, in 19 years, which is very impressive. But Alonso, I think at the moment, the way he's dominated the Bundesliga, the way he reached the semi-finals of the Europa League in his first season, it's just a little bit more impressive. And the sort of numbers as well that we have access to sort of suggest that his pressing is a bit more intense, his bit a bit more in line with what Jurgen Klopp is doing. So for me, he remains the outstanding candidate. But I wouldn't complain, you know, if it was Amorim. I think
he's
still got a lot of qualities about him that would make him a good fit for Liverpool.
Will be interesting to see, whoever it is, what information we get released to us or through the press eventually about the search, because we've heard about it being statistical based, Will Spearman being involved, haven't we, how it's been done, what the outstanding candidate brings, and maybe even potentially who they can get might play a part of it as well. We will have to see. And I suppose we'll only spend a short bit of time on this, just because the only other big thing that came off the pitch was the fixtures were announced. And in a way, thank God we're out the FA Cup, because you look at that end of April, Ben. I mean, as it stands, and as I say this, in case people jump on it, I know it's subject to, it may change if Arsenal make the next round of the Champions League and their fixtures, you know, where one may move down. But, I mean, surely it drew your attention as well, those three games in 6 days. The Fulham Sunday, the Merseyside Derby Wednesday, West Ham on the Saturday 12:30, all away from home as well. It feels super tough. I can't really think of another way of putting it just right. I mean, thinking back a little bit, early kickoffs, not too bad, but that feels tough, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, I think the only kind of, we're fortunate that it is the Everton game that comes in between those
two. Yeah.
At least we won't have to travel that much for that one. I mean, imagine if it was a sort of another London game or, you know, somewhere else in the country. That would have increased our travel even more. So the fact that, you know, this game comes technically is being played in Liverpool, I think will help, but it does seem very tough. Like Fulham away, they're a good side. It's not going to be easy. We've seen in the Cup, they weren't easy in the semi-finals. Everton, I mean, no matter how badly Everton are doing, they're always going to be a problem for Liverpool. It's the derby. You just never know what's going to happen, especially when we're playing away. And then Atalanta, it's the second leg, correct me if I'm wrong.
I think it's Atalanta, and then I think it's literally, because it starts the 21st, I think it's the Fulham game, and then it's those three in a row, literally.
It's going to be tough,
It is, and West Ham to finish. There's a lot of teams who would love to put a dent, you'd fancy, in our title dream, wouldn't you? But we will see how that unfolds. And moving into this week, because it's a week coming, obviously it's Easter weekend for people, but Liverpool play on Sunday, and then they play on the Thursday, don't they? So it's Brighton, Sheffield United. Now, I think it's fair to say, in terms of fixtures, people don't look at these two and think, oh, that's a, you know, a lot of people I think would have even picked these, especially the Sheffield United one, I think would be the obvious one to a certain extent, Ben. I mean, let's talk about this, first of all. Brighton, De Zerbi, another manager who's been linked with us, hasn't he? Maybe to a lesser extent than Alonso or Amorim, but definitely in the mix, shall we say. I'm not expecting a good answer when I think about this. What's our record like against De Zerbi, even if it's at Anfield as well?
I mean, he's only played at Anfield once, and that was a draw. So, to be in all fairness, is it one game? Is this hard to go off of?
Small but sample size, him, yeah.
We've played him four times, and we've never beaten him, actually. So, yeah, that doesn't bode well for us. I think the last time we played them was actually just before an international break. So,
yeah,
a nice sort of contrast, or interesting contrast, that now we're playing him as the first game back after an international break. That was a 2-2 draw. I think at the time, Brighton were a lot more impressive than they have been.
Yeah, before. Higher up. Definitely.
They've had a lot of injuries since then. You know, Mitoma, who's caused us a lot of problems, he's out for the season. So,
yeah,
causing us problems, which is good. Overall, I think it was a game that we would have felt we should have won. I thought we dominated, and we were just kind of unlucky with that one. And again, we seem to have it a few times now with the international breaks, where we go into the international break a little bit disappointed or on the back of a poor result. That was one of those where I think we were kind of disappointed. But yeah. Our Anfield record in the last three games hasn't been good either. We've had two draws and one defeat. There was a 3-3 draw. Then there was a 2-2 draw. Remember Enoch Mwepu, who,
the one in the corner. Top corner.
He's a big, I know him, and I know he's a big Liverpool fan. So that meant a lot to him. And it felt weird seeing someone that you've spoken to score against Liverpool. And it's kind of like, you know, you want him to do well, and you know how important that moment was. But at the same time, I was like, could have done it when we were 3-0 up, you know, something like that.
Indeed, yeah, importance-wise.
And then there was a 1-0 defeat back in February of 2021. Again, we're mentioning that season again. Was a bit of an anomaly. It wasn't with fans. So actually, the last time we beat Brighton at Anfield in the Premier League was in 2019. In November 2019. So that was the season that we won the league. Virgil van Dijk scored a brace. We won 2-1 and obviously went on to lift the Premier League title at the end of the season. So, you know, I don't know if it's written in the stars, but if we do get that victory over Brighton, I think it's interesting that the last time we were able to beat Brighton at Anfield was when we won the league, coincidentally. And obviously we're fighting for that again this season.
Indeed, yeah. Look at that. Four times that we played De Zerbi and not won. Yeah, back to 2019. That is, it's the banana skin potential. And I mean, we're all still expecting, I think it's fair to say, us to beat Brighton. Like you mentioned, the injuries they've had, the way it's gone for them. They're probably struggling to navigate that Europa and the league together a little bit there at the same time. I mean, this an interesting one this week. There doesn't seem that many weeks, Ben, where there's been two Premier League games in a week. I mean, we know we've had a weekend then moved because of, you know, a Thursday Europa game or a Carabao, something like that. But there doesn't seem to have been too many where there's been two league games, like this Sunday, Thursday or whatever. What do the stats look like for us when it's two league games in a week? Is this, do they bear well? Please tell me they bear a little than the De Zerbi record.
Yeah, I mean, last time out was in February when we beat Brentford away from home and then Luton on Wednesday. I think they were both 4-1, so didn't seem to cause us any problems. We also played Chelsea midweek a bit before that, but that was like there was an FA Cup game in between.
Yeah. So
I didn't count that, but 4-1 victory midweek in a Premier League game again. Then before that was, I think, back in December when we drew with Arsenal in a game where, well, if VAR was working properly, I'd argue we should have won. And then we went to Burnley away and got a 2-0 victory, if I remember correctly. So again, didn't seem to cause us problems. And then if you remember, that before that was when we beat Fulham 4-3 at Anfield, and then went to Sheffield United. You know, again, we're going to be facing Sheffield United in a midweek game, so it's twice now this season. But yeah, but every single time when we have played a midweek game after a Premier League match at the weekend, we have won. So I don't think that record is going to change on Thursday against Sheffield United. I mean, I think that would be the surprise result of the season, or the shock of the season, if Sheffield United even got a point against Liverpool in that game. I mean, it should. I mean, I'm going to touch wood here, just because I'm a little bit cautious of, you know, jinxing it for us. But it would really be a huge sort of surprise if Sheffield had anything out of that game, and I'm expecting a big win. And yeah, I think, you know, fingers crossed that's how it turns out.
I think so. Yeah, it's actually quite good. You almost forget, don't you, like that Luton week, even when we had all the injuries in the Brentford game, Darwin does his audacious chip. We're literally, struggling for bodies against Luton. We're 1-0 down at half-time, but we go on to win it 4-1. Yeah, like you say, Fulham, Sheffield. So it actually looks quite good in a way. And I think you made a fair point if we would pick anyone to play in the league, it would be Sheffield United at home. I don't think there's any debate on that, realistically. You look at the position, so you can have zero complaints about that fixture. But we have got 2 in a week coming up, and we'll have to see what unfolds for the Reds, won't we, ladies and gents? And the final bit of the show that I'm going to ask Ben, and there's a bit of a caveat to this, because I'm going to ask Ben for his Player of the Year and Young Player of the Year contenders, usually a top two, a top three. But naturally, because of the focus of the show, ladies and gents, it's going to be around stats, isn't it? So it can't just be like we like style. It's going to be the hardcore numbers that we like as well. So, Ben, and I totally appreciate, as I'm saying this, there's still a big part. There's the business end of the season, and we hope someone makes themselves an absolute hero. And, you know, all have cases, shall we say, as much as that. But let's go senior, first of all. The senior player of the year contenders, at least, a top three, shall we say, maximum, based on the stats that we have from this season.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Yeah, I mean, I know Salah's been a little bit injured recently, but he's got to be up there. He's producing crazy numbers in terms of goals. But I think for me, the sort of key stat for him is the fact that he's averaging over 0.5 expected assists per 90, which, you know, if you look at even like peak De Bruyne, he's only managed that once in his entire career in a season. So that is just crazy numbers creatively, Salah has been brilliant. I think, you know, he's won games at times single-handedly. I mean, there was one game against Sparta Prague recently where he created 9 chances, which is just crazy. Like that. And obviously, goal scoring wise, he's still the same Salah, but he's just sort of elevated his game creatively as well. And we're sort of, I think, we could be seeing the best version of him yet in a Liverpool shirt. There is an argument for that anyway. For that, you've got to make him a player of the season contender. And I mean, similarly, I don't think I'm going to surprise anyone when I say Virgil van Dijk. Defensively, he's been brilliant. His aerial presence in particular, he's won 80% of his aerial duels or around that, which is the highest in Europe's top 5 leagues.
Wow.
The centre-backs, I mean, everything else as well, he sort of ranks in the top 5 in the Premier League for in terms of defensive duels, interceptions. He's been his usual best, really. Numbers-wise, he's got to be, I think for me, not just for Liverpool, but he's someone I would consider for PFA player of the season.
No doubt.
For that. Salah maybe misses out because of the injury period and the AFCON he had. I think, you know, maybe, I know that these sort of votes can be pretty harsh. So especially when it comes to Liverpool players, they don't seem to get the recognition they often deserve. So maybe Salah misses out, although I don't think he deserves to. But Van Dijk surely, certainly, that would be incredible if, you know, he doesn't make the shortlist. Third, I mean, you know, Darwin Nunez. I kind of have to say him because I picked him as my player of the season or predicted player of the season at the start of the season on one of these podcasts. And I think he's sort of proven me right, you know. A goal or assist every 79 minutes for Liverpool in all competitions. And it's not just, you know, that he's scoring and contributing with goals regularly, but he's scoring at important times. So 6 match winners, which is the highest for Liverpool this season. And they've come at really crucial periods. Obviously, it's Nottingham Forest, that final winner. And you know, those kind of goals could end up, if Liverpool do win the league, could end up, you know, making sure that Liverpool do win the league. So
definitely.
For that reason, you know, he's got to be up there. He's got to be a contender. And I think just if we're looking at most improved player as well, which, you know, that used to be an award when I was playing football on Sunday League.
Yeah.
I think he'd win that by a mile, but just in general, he's got to be a contender for player of the season as well.
Yeah, well, interesting. There'll be some Alexis McAllister fans screaming at you, no doubt. But the stats, as we say, back up in terms of goals and assists there. And the final one, and I suspect, I could be wrong, I'm saying this like I know, but I suspect it'll be 3 that are in the call-ins for this. The young player of the year contenders for you, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, almost seems unfair to include Harvey Elliott in this, but I did because, like, I know he technically counts as a senior player, but he's still only 20 and, you know, he's been brilliant both creatively. I think he ranks for key passes according to Y Scout. He's actually averaged more than Odegaard in the Premier League this season per 90. He obviously ranks just below, I think, Salah and Alexander-Arnold for the metric. Creative metrics, he's just behind Alexander-Arnold and Salah. So that shows you, you know, the standards that he is hitting. I mean, on top of that, 11 goal contributions now for Liverpool. He's been in great form over the last sort of 10 games. I think he's got 7 goal contributions or all close around that for Liverpool, which is really impressive. 22 in total for club and country this season.
Nice.
I mean, you can't really argue against that. He's got to be a contender. And like we mentioned earlier on, it's a surprise that he's not really in contention for the senior England squad, because I think he deserves to be. Kwanzaa, he's come on really well this season. stood out for his passing ability. I mean, most games he plays, he completes the most passes on the pitch. He's in the top 10 for defensive duels in the Premier League. And he's one of the few centre-backs in the Premier League. And I know it's a small sample size, but
yeah,
he averages 6 aerial duels per 90. And out of those few centre-backs who average such a high volume, he actually has the sort of best success rate with over 65%. So again, based on those numbers, you can't really argue against
that.
And lastly, I mean, I went for Conor Bradley. I think no surprise, really. I know he's only really started to play for Liverpool in 2024 in the second half of the season. But even so, like, just looking around Europe's top five leagues, he is averaging the most goal contributions in all competitions from under 23 fullbacks in Europe's top five leagues. It's, I think, just around 0.35 per 90 or something like that, which is really impressive. And, you know, those under 23 fullbacks include Alphonso Davies, Ryan Aitnuri, so like there's a lot of high quality big names, big value players involved, and Bradley is not only averaging more goal contributions per 90, but he actually has more goal contributions in total as well. But for example, Davies, I think, only has 4, whereas Bradley already has 7 this season for Liverpool. And actually, in the calendar year for 2024, no one has more sort of total goal contributions in all competitions from Europe's top five leagues out of fullbacks than Bradley. So he's had a pretty good year so far, and obviously topped that off with his first international goal at senior level. So yeah, I think the sky's the limit for him, and he's got to be a contender, although I think maybe any other season he would have won it. Alonso might have won it, but if we're being fair, if we are, you know, basing it on age, not on experience, it's got to be Elliot.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? You're right. Probably all three in many seasons that Liverpool have had, they'd have been the clear winner by a mile. In fact, in other seasons we've had, probably the likes of Bobby Clark would have had a shot as well, and people like that who've also done well. But exactly as you said, these three youngsters, they've been pretty special this season. Elliot, Kwanzaa and Bradley have been unbelievable. And with that in mind, ladies and gents, we might need them on Sunday. Who knows? But all it really leaves me to ask Ben is the very final question. Ben, it all starts back up. The business end, really, as people say, 10 games to go. This isn't a factual stat. This is a guess a little bit. But if you had to put money on Sunday, what are you going for?
I'm going for a 2-0 win. I think we'll get it. I think we finally get one over De Zerbi. You know, he hasn't necessarily experienced Anfield at its peak, I think. And I think on Sunday, we've been starved off, you know, no games for 2 weeks. Disappointing result against Man United. I think Anfield's going to be absolutely buzzing. I think, you know, we've managed to escape the international week relatively.
Yeah.
In terms of injuries, the two key players for me stayed behind as well in Salah and Nunez. So they would have had a rest. They'll be eager to get going and get playing again. So yeah, I think everything points towards us getting a solid win and building on for Sheffield United, but more importantly, that revenge against United next weekend, because that's the big one for me. That could decide the title, and I really want to beat them.
Yeah, I can well imagine. April the 7th, Super Sunday. I think most people put that firmly marked in their calendar if they didn't already after that FA Cup defeat. And we will see, ladies and gents, next time we're back. We'll be talking about, naturally, how we went against Brighton. We'll see if anything else develops. Looking a bit ahead to Sheffield United. Hoping we have positive news on the injury front as well from Jurgen Klopp's press conference. So all it leaves me to say, as ever, is Ben, thanks for the time, thanks for the stats, and thanks for the insight, my mate.
Yeah, a pleasure. And like I said, fingers crossed for some good results this week.
Yeah, indeed. It all starts again, doesn't it, ladies and gentlemen? And that was another Stat Me Up for Anfield Index.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows. Sports Social Podcast Network.